I've had this idea for a long time. I haven't gotten started on it because I don't know what the end goal is. Like, could it actually get made? Is it a play? What is it and what could we do with it? And he was really encouraging, and basically his perspective was, it doesn't matter, just start and things will come. But the point is to just start.
Ladies and gentlemen, and anyone else who is here, my name is Dom Lamour, and you are listening to the Black Man Talking Emotions podcast. On today's episode, I speak with Michael Jordan, not the one you're thinking about, and we speak about our careers, married life, new adventures, and so much more. These are things you should notice anyway. To live only for some future goal is shallow. It's the sides of the mountain which sustain life, not the top. Here's where things grow. But of course, without the top, you can't have any sides. It's the top that defines the sides. Adrian asked me, what do I want to do differently next year? And I said, I want to be more efficient. That was my goal for the year. I don't want to feel like I'm procrastinating. I don't want to feel like I'm lagging off. I don't want to feel like anything was not given the proper amount of time that I needed to give it. And things that like were getting in the way, social media, you know, one second you're talking to someone, the next second you've been scrolling for 30 minutes and you're like, oh shit, I didn't even realize that. How did that happen? You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, so that kind of consumes my ears for a lot of the day. And I wanted to change that. So I've been doing more books. I stopped getting on social as much. I've been scheduling everything. I literally have been knocking out these episodes and really getting some great conversation out of friends. I have newsletters scheduled to be posted for future episodes already. I have future episodes scheduled to be posted. With being so on top of all of the extra work, I have found myself, you know, having a lot of extra time as well. So Adrian and I have been able to, you know, go on a walk here and there, or actually sit down for dinner and talk, and I'm not rushing to do something else. I'm not rushing out to do anything. It's been really consistent and, like I said, just very efficient. And that's the goal, man. I just want to keep on improving. That's kind of my goal for the year. I don't want to forget last year. I feel like people have really, new year, new me. I hate that term because really, I want to take everything that I learned last year or everything I didn't do last year, and I really want to improve on that. And this year has already started off. I feel like I've already started to hit the stride of creating positive habits, putting myself in places where I can look back and be like, oh, damn, I don't even have to worry about that. I already did it. And that's going to be crucial. I mean, we got some trips coming up this year. We're going to Dominican Republic and Haiti. I might be going to Ireland again. I have a lot of wedding trips. We're going to be going all over the country, but we're going to be busy. And I just want to make sure that this podcast is taken care of, because this is one of my favorite things that I do. Getting to talk to people, getting to see people like you. I haven't sat down and talked to you in a while. More than likely was when I was in Kirkwood and we went to get coffee together, where I got some you and I time. So with all that said, I appreciate you being on the pod.
Yeah, man.
How's the top of the year going for you right now?
First of all, I love kind of hearing where you're at and how good you feel about everything. I think that's wonderful. I think, you know, you talk about being efficient, and I've similarly thought a lot about that idea of efficiency, especially with the stuff that I do. I mean, you and I are both creators, I guess. I don't really know what the right term is for what we do. I mean, we have things that we do. We have passion projects that we work mm-hmm. on. I think the ideal goal is to eventually make that passion project be the job. Sometimes I get lost. I realized the other day that I get lost in all of the tasks.
Yeah.
And I have so many different things going on that I have too much. I have like my hands in too many different places. And I do that because, you know, I have to make money to survive, but I want to put everything I can into the projects that I want to work on and want to eventually become. And it just kind of, you get stuck in this like web of too many things.
Yes.
And by trying to do so much, you actually don't do as much. And so like what you're talking about, I really think that's wonderful that you are finding your flow essentially and prioritizing what you want to do, which is awesome.
Yes.
In this year, like that is something that I will try and work towards, but I'm not quite there yet. But, you know, other than that, 2024 has been fine so far. all of the little pots and plates that I have spinning are spinning, which is good. And kind of some of them starting to rotate a little bit faster, which is nice. We'll see where it goes. Still a lot of questions to be answered, but we'll see. They'll come.
I feel like more than anything, what you just said, that kind of, I think it's quicksand. That's what when I hear it, I think of quicksand. And that comes from one of my favorite films of all time, The Replacements, starring Keanu Reeves, of course.
And Gene Hackman, of course.
Yeah, it's such a good movie. But in that movie, they were talking about fear. What are some fears of yours? And everyone was like, I'm scared of spiders and this and that. But then Shane Falco was like, quicksand. I'm scared of, you know, one thing going bad, then another. Next thing you know, you feel like you're drowning. And that was why the efficiency seemed so important for this next year. I feel like I've done so many projects. I've done so many things. Last year was such a dope year. At four big shows that I produced, I performed almost every weekend. I felt like over 40 weekends, I did a wedding and I was in a different city in a different state, somewhere else doing something. I traveled to Japan. I got to see so many things I never thought I would be able to see. I'm from St. Louis. I always tell people in my head, I'm a kid that lived at Cherokee in Indiana, right off of Jefferson in St. Louis, Benning Park. That's my life. I never imagined I would leave that corner. And when I got off the plane in Japan, I still remember being like, man, if you would tell the kid who learned about Japan in the first grade, hey, you're going to go there someday with your wife. I'm like, dude, that's crazy. You're tripping. I wanted to, but it was like, I never believed I would be able to. And that, last year I did that. And with that incredible stuff, I still found myself beating myself up for not doing stuff, getting stuff done. And I'm the same way as you. What you said is so true, where I want to make sure that I at least put 100% towards what I really want to do. And you get to this place where you see the world going by, your passion becomes this habit for some reason, where you have to work doing something else, or you have to do this, and then you get married and you have your duties as a husband, and then you have family and you have friends and you have all of this stuff going on. But the thing that you want to do so bad seems like it's getting pushed down more and more.
Yeah.
And last year I found myself finding ways to fight for what I truly enjoy, for my passions, for my career. And like I said, I don't want to forget that. I don't want to push that away. I don't want to be like, last year I did it wrong. It's like, no, I want to learn from last year. And this year, I already have a better plan for the year than I did in the past. And that's including music, you know, doing an album. I want to produce my own album this year. I want to continue to do the podcast. This will go until September. I want to interview people that I didn't believe I would be able to interview. You know, one of my passion ideas, I don't think this will ever happen, but it's one of my ideas for this show. I would love to interview one of my ex-girlfriends. That sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy, but it would be a dope conversation, in my opinion. One, the idea that, you know, we're not children anymore. You could be in a place where you can have a conversation with someone from your past and be mature enough to get through it. Hopefully that's the ultimate goal with it.
Yeah.
And two, when you talk to those people who know you so well, you know, I forget what I was just watching the other day, but it was maybe a reel on Instagram or something that was talking about how you date this person, they're your best friend, they know everything about you. You break up and it's like almost like you just have to put that information in a file cabinet and just forget about it. And it's like, that would be dope to reopen one of those file cabinets and be like, yo, you good? I'm loving what you're doing. I hope you're doing well. Tell me about your journey. Tell me about things that you've done, how you've grown. That would be a fun opportunity. That talking to my grandpa again would be fun. I just really loved knocking off that history. And all of that's going to come with a lot of persistence and a lot of me really focusing on the goals. And last year, I wouldn't have been able to do the stuff that I wanted to do because it wasn't that I wasn't focused. Let's put that out. Take that out. I am very focused on the goals. I am constantly writing and putting information into my notes to work on. It's just when you look at the results from social media, when you look at the people around you working and doing what you're doing and succeeding, you feel almost some pressure or rush to continue to do this, or you see they're using this new app. I need to learn this new app. Or, oh my God, we got a new social media that takes pictures and they're like, I forget what it's, a last time lapse or something like that, where you're taking these little snapshots and it's like, how do you use this? How can this benefit my career? And it's like, this year I'm just letting that shit go, you know?
Yeah.
Because said, you'll just sit there and you will be surrounded by all this shit. And then you're like, fuck, it's been 4 months and I haven't started this video, or I haven't started this script, or I haven't wrote that song, or I haven't done this poem, or I haven't done anything, you know?
Yeah. In the real estate world, they call that analysis paralysis, of like, you're analyzing the deal and it's got to be the perfect deal. And so you're not writing an offer and therefore you're never going to even start and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it applies to the artistic world. And I was having a conversation with my friend the other day. We went and grabbed lunch because I have this idea for, you know, a feature movie that I think could be shot in St. Louis and would be very fun to do and could be shot with St. Louis talent and things like that. And I wanted to talk to him about it. And I was like, you know, I've had this idea for a long time. I haven't gotten started on it because I don't know what the end goal is. Like, could it actually get made? Is it a play? What is it and what could we do with it? And he was really encouraging. And basically his perspective was, it doesn't matter. Just start and things will come. But the point is to just start. And I think personally for me, I get locked down and I need to see the full picture in my head before I start moving towards something.
Yeah.
And I think that prevents me a lot from not starting anything. And that's the wrong way to approach life. And so talking about things we're working on in 2024, I think that's one thing for me of just, I'm just going to do it and I'm just going to start. I'm just going to outline and then I'm going to start, you know, writing 20 minutes in the morning, just do it, just put words on paper and then see what happens. You get stuck in your own head, for lack of a better term, and you can't get out of it. And you spiral down into that quicksand and you need Keanu Reeves to reach down and pull you out.
Yeah. What a great movie.
It was.
I read two books last year that kind of touched on that. Effortless Mastery, which I really enjoyed that book. And then Rick Rubin's book were two books I read. And he had a moment where he's like, everyone works different. So don't follow other people's thing. If you feel like you got to do it a certain way, do it the way you do it. But the ultimate goal, like you said, is to make sure to do it. And he had this one thing where he was saying, he feels like artists avoid the spiritual, supernatural moment in between writing. You know, the idea that they'll start writing something and then at the end be like, I don't know where that came from. I don't know how that happened. It just happened.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you don't do it, if you just don't stay in the habit and you don't push yourself out there, you can't allow that supernatural to do its work because it's always there to help you.
Yeah.
You're an artist. It doesn't matter what's going on. You put the pen to paper. Eventually, it's going to come out the way you want it to. And you're going to look up and be like, what was that? And that's kind of one of the things I did last year. Last year, I started off the year saying, I want to write 100 songs because I want to work the muscle. And that was kind of the thing I got from those two books. Work the muscle, kind of put it in your brain that creating is what you want to do and just start creating. And by the end of the year, into this year, it's like, I don't have to sit down and say, hey, I want to sit down and write a song now. It's like, oh, I got an idea. Because I've been writing so much consistently, pushing it out, good or bad. And in the Mastery book, it was talking about the idea, have you ever sat down and wrote a bad song? And I was like, oh, you know, it wasn't bad. I didn't try to make it bad. And the idea with this this practice in this book was to truly sit down and say, I'm going to write a song that's bad. I am purposefully going to sit down and write a song that's bad. And it's just adding to that consistent act of doing the art, because eventually you get to a point where you're like, I'm going to make a bad song. And then you're writing, you're like, wait a minute, this is actually kind of good, you know? So
yeah,
and that's the same situation. It's just a matter of doing it, consistently pushing yourself into the direction that you want to go. So I agree with you. I understand it's one of those weird things that I'm very fortunate. I've been talking to Adrian. It's just refreshing for me, but I understand that it's kind of out of nowhere, you know? It's just a matter of, I got to a place where I actually said I wanted to work on this, and it's been working. So it brings me to you. There's this quote from a song, actually, on the Wale album, the album About Nothing. Jerry Seinfeld was on that album with him, and he was talking about marriage. And Wale, famously, one of his songs was like, he's like 30 years old, never been to a wedding, and he just doesn't like the idea, the energy of all that. He's trying to keep away from it. And he just has doubts. He doesn't believe anybody could be planned or ready for a wedding or this and that. And he's asking Jerry Seinfeld about this. And Jerry, you know, and this very Jerry, no, you know, like very Jerry Seinfeld about it. He's like, do you feel like even if you plan, like you're ready? And he's like, I mean, you can't plan for growth. That's his thing. He's saying marriage, you become a new person and it's growth. It's different. You're going to be a different person after that. And I've seen a lot of people speak on this subject recently for some reason. And I'm curious on your behalf, because like you said, you're a performer, your wife's a performer. You're in the world where you don't have someone in your household who's looking at you like, why are you doing this? No, you're looking at someone else who's also inspired, who's also pushing themselves to move forward in the industry. How do you feel being married has affected your work ethic or your content creations? Like, has it changed anything for you?
That's a really good question. I mean, in general, being married for me doesn't feel any different than, you know, when Abby and I were just living together, because we were together for 8 years beforehand, and being married is rather just a continuation of that. It's cool to be able to see things like my wife, but from that standpoint, it's the same. I think in terms of how I approach creating things, I am very, very grateful for Abby, because she is very different from me in the way that she approaches her art. She has an unbelievable faith in herself and in the fact that what she wants will come to her eventually, as long as she keeps moving forward. And I am so inspired by her and her ability to just move forward doing what she wants, how she wants to do it, and, you know, basically where she wants to do it, because I'm not that way. I often think about, like, what's the point of this? Where's this going to be? How's it going to live? Like, what's the strategy of getting people to watch it, and blah, blah, blah. And so I run into all these walls and I get down on myself and I go up and down. It's a very roller coaster ride for me. And she has to weather that storm. And her approach is always like, do what you love, and what you love will come back to you.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to hold on to that and kind of take that to heart. And it's wonderful to watch her live that example, just like everybody else who does what we do. You know, she's got disappointments and things like that and struggles, and she works through it. And, but that energy and faith that she has in herself and the universe is one of the most beautiful things, and one of the things that I love most about her, and one of the things that inspires me the most about her. And in terms of, like, how does that move into the day to day? I don't know. I think the biggest question right now for us is, where do we want to live? You know? She's been taking online classes at the Groundlings in LA from St. Louis. We live in St. Louis now, and she's to the point now where she needs to be in person at the Groundlings classes, and it's going well. She's progressed through the levels and made it through. And so now the question is, like, she's talking about going out there for 6 or 8 weeks or whatever it is. And then, you know, my question to her is, you know, do you want to be in Los Angeles? Because you're to this point now where, let's say you go out there for 8 weeks and you do this class and it goes really well and they want you to do the next one, well, you're going to have to be in Los Angeles again.
Yep.
And it's just kind of like, if that's what you want to do, then, you know, that's kind of where we need to be. And that's okay. Like, I'm here to support you on that and I'm happy to do that. But it's just kind of a question of, is that where we want to be? I think, you know, during the pandemic, we were blessed with all these cities being like, you know what? Everybody went home. It's cool. You can audition from anywhere and we'll bring you in. We get it. But now we're to the point now where these major cities are kind of like, you need to be here. We don't want you out of towners anymore. And it's just kind of like what it was beforehand. So now the question is, what spot do you want to be in? And do you want to make that transition again? That's the biggest thing that I think we're questioning right now and is kind of like the internal struggle. And we've just been kind of waiting for like a sign. And I finally said to her the other day, I was like, I think we just need to make a choice and commit.
I feel like since I know your wife and I know how talented she is, I've always felt like anyone with her got to kind of be ready to move at any point. Because I think Abby is one of the most talented performers I've ever met, easily. And someone's going to hit her up like, hey, we need you to come work in New York, or we need you to come work here. And she, like, it makes sense. That would totally be something. Because like you said, I remember her moving to Chicago. I don't even think she had an apartment yet. She just was like, yo, I'm moving to Chicago. Abby is one of those people who, I mean, she believes in herself because she has the goods. She's really good at what she does and she puts the work in. And to also be a creator and a content maker and to be with someone like that, I'm sure that's just, like you said, it's a thrill to be able to see someone like that, because it should inspire you as well, or at least scare you enough to do stuff.
You know, it scares me. It leads me to the scary side of things. I'm like, ooh, I gotta get my act together.
I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank Michael for being on the pod. This week has been a lot of fun for me. Michael is one of those guys that whenever we speak, we leave the conversation with more to talk about. We have a lot in common, and it's so cool how the universe brings people together through friendships. Michael's wife, Abby, and I went to college together, and we have worked together on multiple shows in Chicago and Los Angeles. I try my best to keep in touch with my people. Michael has fit into the crew perfectly. Nothing but love for those two. How do you feel you're dealing with St. Louis now? I feel like every time I talk to you, I ask you this question. Just because I know my hometown and I love my hometown, but I know how difficult it can be for people, especially if they're not from there. How do you feel you're molding into St. Louis?
I have nothing but good things to say about St. Louis, and I've been trying to work this. So just a little bit of background. Abby and I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. Abby grew up in St. Louis. We met in Chicago. I was there for 10 years. Then we moved to LA. That's where I met you.
Great time.
In 2018, and we were in LA until the pandemic hit. And lost both our sources of income out there. We kind of rided it out as long as we could go. And then we came back to St. Louis, which is where Abby's family is from, to kind of like weather the rest of the storm. And then we got engaged and then we got married, and it's been 4 years now. I never expected to be in St. Louis. It was never a place that I thought I would be. I had always visited it on holidays and things like that and enjoyed it, but it was mostly family stuff. Living here, the things that I love about St. Louis are the city itself feels like a small little Chicago.
Yeah.
It annoys me that you still have to have a car to navigate the city. That frustrates me. I love the pockets of St. Louis, the neighborhood pockets. It's insanely annoying that you can't get from pocket to pocket in an easy fashion. Mm-hmm. I love that there is a bunch of nature everywhere, especially within like 2 hours of St. Louis. You can be in mountains that feel somewhat similar to the Appalachians, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And St. Louis has been very welcoming to me in terms of the friends that I have met. There is an improv theater here that I performed at for the first year, which was great. And then I discovered like rock climbing and now have that core group of friends who has been really opening to me. And so like St. Louis has loved me. And I am trying and have been trying to figure out why I don't feel that same connection. And I think that for me, as I've tried to wrestle with this, I think it stems from, I don't like being in the suburbs. Mm. And we are in the suburbs.
Yep.
And I would like to be in a city. And I think that might change my perspective, but I don't know. I'm constantly looking for all this like external validation. And I know that's wrong. And I need to focus inward and figure out what it is about me. So I still don't have a good answer for you, Dom. And
understood. Like,
and I have nothing but love for St. Louis. Because it's had nothing but love for me. I just am trying to find my footing here and I just can't seem to find it. And I don't know why that is. I feel like it's taken longer than any other major move that I've made in my life. And I'm not sure why.
And see, you saying that suburb thing, I totally understand that. And to just to knock it out of your brain, moving to the city isn't going to help that because yeah. There's part of the city that feels like the suburbs. That's the one of the craziest things about St. Louis. You could live in the city and feel like you live in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. It, unless you live downtown near Busch Stadium and you're in one of the lofts down there, you're not going to really feel like you live in a city. If you live on the south side off Chippewa, you're gonna feel like you're in the suburbs and you're going to be in the city then. So I get that. It's just one of those things.
I mean, I don't need to live downtown, but I do want to be able to like walk from my house or apartment or whatever to a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like put me in Tower Grove South and I'll walk to Grand and go to those places that I want that feel.
Yeah.
And whereas like where we are, like I have to get in a car no matter where I go.
No, I understand.
You just have to get in a car because there's nothing close.
And that it breaks my heart too. I lived off of Grand and Shenandoah at Tower Grove for a year. And like you said, I was able to walk right over there on South Grand to Rooster and all those restaurants, my favorite Chinese food restaurant across the street. I got to really interact with these places. I worked at the Fox. If I truly wanted to just walk and not ride the bus, it was only like a mile and a half walk. It wasn't that far away of a walk. So I get that. Everything you're saying makes total sense. It is really interesting. And the worst part about it is, like, for me, as someone from St. Louis, having grandparents and family from St. Louis, you hear the glory days of when the trolley system was one of the best trolley systems in the country. And back then, the trolley would go as far as Baldwin, from what I believe. Maybe not that far, but it for sure came out to the suburbs. It came out to Kirkwood. It came out to Webster Groves, at least. And the idea that they destroyed that, and the reason why now you have to drive a car is because of the reason why they destroyed those trolley systems. They wanted to make sure the cars in the interstate were used. And I feel like this past week, I've been having this discussion more and more about how America has put itself in some of the weirdest situations globally and homebound. And we're just going to stay here right now. I'm not going to jump on anything globally right now because there's so much going on. But that's one of those things where they were like, you know what? We're going to do this American made. And all of these cars are made here in America. And we're going to build this interstate. And that's going to be the way it is. And they destroyed people's lives, destroyed homes to create all of these highways. And now we look at everybody and we're like, the highways are too stuffed. They're not big enough. It wasn't efficient in the first place.
No.
And what you're saying is so true. When you get a taste of living in a city or metropolitan where they actually have a good train system or bus system, something. It makes life a lot easier. I get it. Everything you're saying, I get, and I'm not going to press you anymore. I just, like I said, it's one of those things that I'm always curious about my friends who move back home or who's never lived in St. Louis, go to St. Louis and they struggle. Now, you know, Jay Boogie, Stephanie Peterson's husband, he kind of has those same quarrels. You know, he really loved living in New York, and they go from New York to St. Louis. I get it.
I know.
It is not the same.
I know. You add to it as well. Like, try making friends in your 30s. It's just hard.
Yeah.
It's just hard. But all of that being said, I have made some great friends and they've been very welcoming to me and I love them for it. It's just, I continue to search for that answer and it just hasn't revealed itself to me. But I've done some amazing things. A lot of the stuff that I'm working on now has been spawned from St. Louis and Missouri and the people that I've met and the connections that I've made. And I'm moving in this direction now with the things that I'm creating and doing that is pretty awesome. And I never would have thought it would have been possible. And it's all because of my time living here in St. Louis and in Missouri. And I recognize that. And so that's that struggle that I have of like, what's the internal struggle with me based on all these blessings that are coming into my life from having been in the city and with the people who are in my life around me. So that.
So I've seen you've been doing these dope reels. Mm-hmm. And I saw the one that you did with the Dogwood Trail. I think it was Mark Twain State Park, I believe, right? You know, you got this great camera views and you're on the trail, you're hiking, you're going through it. Tell me about that and creating those reels. Are you doing those by yourself? And also, like you said, you've jumped into the hiking lifestyle in Missouri and you're seeing all of these incredible parks. Just talk about how that's affected you and putting together those reels and your purpose for doing all that.
So I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is in the Smoky Mountains. They were in my backyard. And so I was always hiking as a kid. My mom loves the mountains, still loves the mountains. And then I moved to Chicago and it's flat and I didn't have a car and I lived in the city. Then when we were in LA, like one of the things that I really loved about Los Angeles is once I was there for about a year, I started unlocking all of the stuff that's just around Los Angeles. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
what you said, I totally understand that. Like you could go to the beach, you could be in the mountains, you could drive to the desert, you could be anywhere within an hour.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I always called it once you unlock California, then the whole state just opens up to you and you're just like, oh my God, everything is here. Like it's incredible. So I started hiking a bunch in LA. And then when we moved back to St. Louis, I just kept doing that. I was like, I'm just going to go hike. It was still the pandemic. Not a lot of stuff was open. It was something I could do outside by myself. And so I went, and luckily, if you go south from St. Louis down 55 for about an hour and a half, you end up in Mark Twain National Forest, and there's just a ton of state parks down there.
Yep.
And I think the one that really, you know, opened my eyes to all the beauty that Missouri has was Hahn State Park.
Yeah.
And specifically the Whispering Pines Trail. And I hiked that and I was like, this is amazing. I had no clue that this was in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And I had in LA, I just started filming my hikes. There's a YouTuber named Craig Adams, Craig with a K, and he goes all over the world and makes these amazing, like relaxing hiking videos. And I was like, man, I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Like if I could do that, that would be awesome. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll just start. And so I just started filming my hikes with my phone and a tiny little tripod. I mean, I'm talking like a foot tall. I filmed that. I would upload them to my YouTube channel. You know, when I started going around Missouri, I started doing the same thing. And it's just me and my phone and I set it up. I walk past it and then I turn around and I come back and pick it up and then cut out everything but the good part. Just kind of put it together and started putting it up on YouTube. And then I just started doing a blog post about it as well to kind of coincide with it and would post that to my website. I was like, all right, if I'm going to make videos that'll keep me going outside, if I have this schedule, then I will start doing this once a week. And I did. And I just started exploring all of these state parks that Missouri has. And then last year, around February, I got an email from a publisher at Falcon Guides, which is a hiking guidebook. They do guidebooks for states all over. And he was like, hey, we're looking to do a hiking Missouri guidebook. Are you interested in writing it?
Yo.
And I was like, yeah. And like terrified, but like, yeah. And so that really then kicked it even more into gear. Like, okay, now I have to hike 40 hikes all over the state.
Yeah.
And do all this additional work in terms of like, you know, directions and how to get there and blah, blah, blah. And like all this fun stuff on top of writing like 500 words per hike. And so that then even more so kind of encouraged me to explore more of the state.
Yeah.
So I'm Kansas City and I'm stuffed south of Columbia, Branson and all that, like everything.
Yeah.
Mark Twain State Park is one of the few places north of 64, like in the northern half of Missouri, but it's a beautiful park. And I never would have gone there had this book opportunity not come up. And so now I've kind of upped my game a little bit. Like now I have a better camera and I'm trying to learn that and do more of that. But it all kind of funnels through my YouTube channel. So I try and post like roughly like a 7 to 10 minute video about the hikes. And it's just me kind of showing what this hike is, talking about it. And then I go back and I do a bunch of research on it and then create a blog post with more information and things like that. And then got this one big video, and then I'll take clips from that big video and use them as like Instagram reels and YouTube shorts and things like that.
Man, it's so bizarre how these conversations do this sometimes, because we just spoke about your incredible wife, Abby, and one of her big things is do what you love and it'll come back to you. And then you tell me about one of the big things you're working on now, and that strictly came from you enjoying the outside. Uh-huh. Filming yourself, just doing it because, you know, I love doing this. I'm just going to do it. And boom, an opportunity comes. And it's like, it's kind of stressful, but this is really cool.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. And I truly believe in that energy. When you put that energy into the universe, when you speak it into existence, when you say, this is what I enjoy, I love this, those opportunities tend to happen because people will notice it. And that's so dope. Especially being a kid from Missouri, I feel like you said, north of 64 or 70 has not been explored. I had a girlfriend who went to college in Truman, and I never went up there to visit her. And so I don't really know much about northern Missouri at all. I know central Missouri. I know. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's not a lot up there. It's flat.
It's not. I bet it's a lot of farms. But with that being said, with the camping and the hiking, I didn't start hiking until I went to LA as well. When you're home in St. Louis, you got to be in the right crew to get to understand that part of the state. And I don't think I would have appreciated it as a kid either. I feel like as a kid, I'd be like, ugh, it's just Missouri. You know, I would have been like, this is stupid. But then to go other places, like we hike here in Georgia, go to California. We did a lot of national parks on the way to Georgia to get to see that stuff and then come home, realize just how green Missouri is. You realize just how different every aspect of the environment can be when you're in different parts of the state. When I lived in Chicago, like you said, I'll never forget my cousin from Chicago came to St. Louis for the first time, and they were riding my bike for like 3-4 hours one day, up and down the same hill. It wasn't like they were taking it on a long, they literally were riding down the hill, walking the bike back up the hill, riding it down the hill for like 4 hours, for real.
Yeah.
And later that night we were talking, they were like, you know, like, it's just the greatest thing ever. Like, I've never been able to ride a bike down a hill before. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you could ride your bike in Chicago. She was like, no, you don't. It's flat. It's flat. There are no hills in Chicago. And those little things I wouldn't appreciate. But then someone else comes and shows me, you're lucky. And like I said, looking at that video, it made me want to go on that hike that you put from Mark Twain. It was a really pretty hike. And that's the one thing I rave about Georgia. I rave about how green and pretty it is and this and that. But I grew up around that. And it just was something I didn't appreciate because I was from it. You know, I think it's dope. I think it's really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing the newer ones with the higher quality and the information that you're putting on. I would love to see that trail book when you get that together, because that sounds like
great situation. I got 9 more to go, so I'm close. Close. I'm so close.
Where in the 9 that you're doing?
2 that are basically straight south of St. Louis, almost to the Arkansas border. Mm. And then I'm going to do like a trip to Branson and knock out 3 around Branson. And then 3 more around KC. So what is that? Yeah. 6, 7, 8, maybe 8 more. Okay. 8 more.
When you speak about Branson and whatever you write, it's a touchy subject for people from Missouri. Just so you know.
Okay.
Older people from Missouri, my great grandmother, I always remember this. She would always, she traveled the country. Wherever the Greyhound would take her, she would go. She was always seeing the Grand Canyon, these incredible places. But when I ask her, whenever I ask her, where is your favorite place to go visit? It was always Branson. Always. Hmm. Never failed. She went to Washington, D.C., Chicago, all of these places a million times. Branson, Missouri is my favorite place to visit in the country. So when you speak on it, just be conscious of that. There are some people who love Branson so much. If you find yourself being like, oh, it's kind of run downtown, but don't say that.
Heard.
Just keep it clean. Keep it clean.
Yeah, I've actually never been inside. I've driven past it a lot.
Yeah.
But I've never been to it. But I know it feels like it's going to be a lot like Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Now, I could be wrong. I don't know. I haven't been there. But in my brain, I'm like, oh, this is Pigeon Forge. They've got a bunch of live shows that you get to go to. They got a big holiday stuff. There's probably a theme park around there.
Yep. Silver Dollar City.
Yeah. So in my brain, I'm like, yeah, it's going to be like Pigeon Forge. I get it. But we'll see. But thank you. Noted. Noted.
Oh, man. I'm just going to give a rundown of all the boys I've been in love with. My last boyfriend turned out to be, a girl. apparently I kissed a girl and I liked it. He said his name was Joel, but it was Jolene. So, but then, there was Betty. He was cool. He was the kind of a Lily Roses by stairs. Surprises them, you know he cares. But he didn't care that much because I caught him and another girl. And I was like, hey, what's going on? So we broke up, but I still really loved him. And so I knocked on his door a week later, and I was like, I hate to show up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away. I couldn't fight it. I couldn't see my face. And that you be reminded that for me, it isn't over. And that didn't work. He was just like, hey, you're crazy, bitch. And that made me blue. Dab-a-dee-dab-a-dee-dab-a-dee-dab-a-dee. Oh, and then when I was Jesse's girl, him and I had gotten this back and forth argument because he'd always call me baby. He'd be like, baby, no, baby love, my baby love. I need ya, oh, I need ya. Baby, let me sleep on it. Oh, let me sleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning. Oh, baby, oh, I'm so we just fought all the time. So we are never, ever, ever getting back together. And all these guys want to break up with me. And I'm just like, I don't want to be friends. Watch out that romance. And then they even leave before dinner. And I'm like, why don't you stay? right now I'm home by myself.
This is my girl Abby performing in the first show that I did in Chicago. It was called What Is Love? And Abby got to do her scene and put together a couple of things with me, and she did a little stand up, and I just really wanted to showcase her so you kind of see the bridge between me and Michael, with us both being associated with this incredibly talented artist who I admire so much. So I hope you enjoyed Abby. And of course, you can check out my music on all streaming platforms, and you can check me out for more information at DonLamore.com, where you can get anything and everything Don Lamore. Living in LA, you were one of the few people that whenever I started talking vinyls, your ears would pop up and you'd be like, oh, vinyls. Yeah, I got my vinyls too. In LA, truly, I think I had a big push before I moved to Chicago in St. Louis, where I got a lot of the vinyls from my grandmother. And that was kind of where it stayed for a while. I was just with those few records. I was still exploring those. I thought they were really cool. Then I got to LA, and then I was like, you know what? Now I'm going to really start collecting vinyls, really start putting the work in, really start putting together a cool collection. I wanted my collection to be diverse. I wanted to be able to be in any room, and no matter who I'm talking to, including you, if you're like, oh, I just got this vinyl, no big deal. I'd be like, well, I got this vinyl. Like, you want to be able to show off how cool your vinyls are that you have. I really enjoyed some of those nights that we would come over and I'll bring like a Red Fox album or this and that. And you would be like, oh, that's so cool. Look at this album. And we'll be going through the different things. Just talk to me about why you're also a connoisseur of the vinyl and what drove you towards it.
I think the best thing about vinyl records is that you can't skip songs.
Yeah.
You drop that needle and then that record spins until it stops and you flip it over and you do it again. And so it forces you to listen to a whole album.
Yeah.
And I think as a kid that grew up in the 90s, like just at like the tail end of tapes, like I remember getting my first tape, but really CDs were the thing. Mm-hmm. And like the ability to skip tracks on a CD was just too easy. And so as a kid, I would find myself just playing my favorite songs on whatever CD I bought. And so you'd like buy the CD for like three songs and you'd listen to those three songs over and over again. Mm-hmm. At least I did. And then you get to the iPod and now you only have songs to choose from.
Yep.
You're not listening to like anything long. And so like when the resurgence of vinyl records happened, I think for me, what really drove me to it is it forced me to listen to the whole thing, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I love that. And it's something that I just didn't do as a kid. And it's a little embarrassing to like say that of like, you know, I love music and I love all types of music. But when I was growing up, I really loved my song and I played my song over and over again.
And there's nothing embarrassing about that because that was the way it was. You know, we were making mixtapes for girls and stuff back then. Like that's the world we grew up in. So like, I mean, we grew up in a time where we discovered something that I'm sure our parents would have died for. They had to play those single vinyls to play that one song over and over and over and over again. They had to find that single vinyl to play it over and over again. We just pushed a button.
I know.
We pushed a button. And if I'm in the car now, I don't even listen to the radio anymore because I can listen to what I want to listen to now.
Yeah.
It's a whole different luxury. So don't feel bad about that. I mean, like I said, man, if like, I forget there's a joke where a guy was like, talking about how you're mad at these kids, but they literally have boobs and butts in their pocket right now. They can look at whatever they want on their phone now. How can you be upset about these kids when they have this power that any of us would have died to have? Mm-hmm. There's nothing to be ashamed about. But
yeah,
your discovery of being able to listen to the album, being able to sit down and be like, you know what? I don't have a choice now. I'm going to have to enjoy or appreciate what's on no matter what song it is. That is really a dope way to look at it. For me, I enjoy the crack. Like everybody else, is, they all just love the crack of the vinyl. And you're like, that's very annoying way of saying why they love it. But for me, like, my mother bought me about 6 vinyls for Christmas this year. And we just listened to one yesterday while we were doing eating dinner. And like I said, it's a mood setter. There's nothing, you could put on music on your phone. You can place music on your TV now. You can just listen to Apple Music, whatever. But to turn on the lights, mood lighting, candles, whatever you want, and just go over to, I have this Bluetooth gramophone. That's how it's attached to my record player. So you turn the gramophone on and you just drop the needle. There's nothing like that now. That's the most unique way to experience music. And we were listening to Sammy Davis Jr.'s live greatest hits album. So all of the tunes were greatest hit songs, but it was live performances of those tunes from different shows.
Yeah.
And it was just phenomenal. It's just so cool to hear, like, you know, who can I turn to? What kind of fool am I? And be like, I've never heard this version of this song.
Yeah.
I've heard so many. YouTube has given me the opportunity to explore his whole career in 3 days. I can listen to every video and song that he sang on YouTube in 3 days. But specifically, some of these vinyls were created just for vinyl. There's no other place you can find the tracks that you get on these vinyls. When you get these specialized vinyls, you really are capturing a moment in time. And it's in that time that you're getting to discover it and live it. And the only time you'll get to do it again is when you play that record again. And there's nothing cooler than that. To me, I've been the guy to this day where if I hear a new song, Arlo Parks is a great artist in England. I heard her album. Well, I heard one of her songs. And so I listened to the song and I was like, that's a great song. I need to hear this album. And so I went and just listened to the full album all the way through because that's the kind of person I am. So like you said, records really add to that. I don't know, that thing that's in my head that's like, I need to hear the full, or I need to get the full experience. I don't feel like one song gives you the full experience of what the artist was truly talking about on that album. Now, with that being said, there are albums now, the Drake album. Drake did one album, I think More Life, I forget what album it was, where he called it a playlist. He didn't call it an album. It was a playlist.
Yeah.
And I think about that and I'm like, there's so many artists now who just make playlist albums that I wouldn't enjoy listening to their record. And I don't. But when you go just back a little bit, or there's still artists like Gregory Porter and Leon Bridges is a great example. His latest album, that's a great listen all the way through, you know? And I don't know. I'm a big history buff too. Like I said, I got John F. Kennedy's speeches, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that my grandmother had in her collection. Motown put out Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech.
Wow.
And I'm searching up and down for that original print. I want the original print of that speech.
Yeah.
For Christmas this year, got what people call the first concept album, In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning by Frank Sinatra, where the whole album is this really lullaby, sad love album where he's really just, every song is in the same vein. Every song just flows right into each other. And it's this experience. And they didn't have that before that album. So while I'm listening to it, I'm like, imagine living in a world where you just hear people putting out singles. You hear people putting out greatest hit albums. Because after Johnny Mathis put out his greatest hits album, everyone was like, oh, I want to cash in on that. So they started just putting in cash, all these greatest hits albums. And imagine one day you go to the record store to pick up your record of the week and Frank Sinatra just dropped In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning and you listen to it and you're like, wait a minute, like he's telling a story throughout this entire album. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time you listen to an album where that happens, where someone truly tries to capture one theme throughout the entire album and you just broke up with your boyfriend. Or you just went through a horrible experience and this is the album that you pick up and you get to really put this album on in every moment where you're like, I need someone that understands. And that's the album you can play now because the whole album focused on this one theme. That's the stuff that gets me. I just love that history. I love that story. I love while I'm listening to it and the friends talking to me about, oh, what album is this? I love being able to give that background because you don't get that anymore.
Yeah.
You don't get that anymore.
I agree. You know, I think the heyday of albums are like, you know, the 70s, right? Of, we're going to give you this whole complete concept of an idea in music. And it just got bigger and bigger. I think film in the 70s kind of reflected that of like, you
yes.
had The Godfather, you had these 3-hour long epic dramas that weren't musicals. From like the golden age of Hollywood, it's like, no, we're going to sit with these characters in their lives for 3 hours. And like, everything was bigger and longer and you really get to immerse yourself in that. And then from that point, it got shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter up until, you know, now, like, you know, you're getting like 10-second clips or whatever, but I've started to notice, at least in film, we're starting to get longer movies now. Like,
no, it's coming back. Yeah.
Yeah. Oppenheimer, 3 hours long. Killers of the Flower Moon, 3 hours long. Like, you're getting these.
I can't wait to watch that one. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm excited.
It's coming out on Apple TV on the 12th.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I can't. I'm going to sit. I'm literally going to make some popcorn and I'm going to legit sit down and watch that one because I wasn't able to go see it in theaters.
Yeah, I'm interested, and I'm curious to know your thoughts if that will start to filter into music as well. I think, you know, to be honest, like, the last major album was probably Taylor Swift's 1989. Before that was probably Beyonce's Lemonade. You know what I mean? But like, these actually fully conceptualized pieces of work.
Well, all right, let me throw one in there, actually. The one that I thought of when you said the latest album, I thought of Silk Sonic.
Dude, I got that right back here.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one that I'm like, that was a full themed album that front to back, you play it, and it felt like one of those albums from the 70s. But
it's great.
What you said, I don't know. What you said was very strong in the sense of, do you think it's going to translate into the music, what the films are doing right now? And I think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, where the whole gimmick of that album that is, he uses music to tell the story, but he's using hits, classics. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like that would work with newer music. That movie doesn't work unless you have Earth, Wind, and Fire reasons playing in the middle of a fight scene. It doesn't work without that. You can do newer music, but it doesn't hit the same way.
Yeah.
And newer albums, you have artists who are truly putting in some great work now. Like, John Legend put out an album. I always listen to it front to back because he still goes by that. But the thing is, even in a John Legend album, his newer ones, you can see the singles are really the ones that he's focusing on. And he's pushing those out, and they don't even feel like they fit on the albums. So most of these, I mean, you know, Olivia Rodrigo and, you know, Pitbull, and, you know, all of these big time superstar pop stars now. TikTok is the world right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Those 40-second clips is the world. And putting together a song that's 2 minutes, 44 seconds that you can release on SoundCloud or you can release on TikTok through a reel and a dance challenge and all this stuff, that's what's making people shit ton of money right now. And the industry isn't going to translate over to, if Lady Gaga decides, you know what, I'm bringing real albums back next year. She's going to put out that real album and it's going to be great and it's going to sell millions. And then Adele will put out a real album and it'll sell millions. But they're going to sell millions because they're established, well-known, big-time powerhouses already. Mm-hmm. A random person like me putting out an album that I'm like, I'm bringing albums back. No one's going to give a fuck unless there is a full music video experience that's attached to it with reels that pop off different challenges for people to be able to see it for a second and it captures them and they're like, I want to experience that over and over and over again. That's how it works now. That's how it works, and it won't change until someone else comes and makes more money. And I don't think a full LP, 16 tracks with a theme and 4-minute long songs, I don't think that's going to be something that people that are pushing $100 million marketing campaigns into these albums, I don't think that's going to be the album that's going to generate more money. I think it's going to be the 2 minute long song, the 1 minute freestyle in between another 2 minute freestyle that you can post on Instagram, you could post on TikTok, you could post on YouTube Shorts, and you can create this 1 minute thing that people want to keep clicking over and over and over again. That's the thing that will continue to make money.
Yeah, you're right. And it's frustrating. And I think there's got to be a breaking point, but you just said something that was really interesting to me and it sparked an idea.
Yeah.
So we have the Eras Tour in theaters.
Yeah.
Which was such an experience. Everybody loved it and it's cool. And I think it's really awesome what Taylor Swift did. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, essentially a greatest hits album concert.
Yeah.
But you just talked about like writing an album, a 16-track LP. But what if you did that and accompanied it with a film? Like, what if it was just the soundtrack to a film? Mm-hmm. I think Tommy's The Who. I think they tried to make Tommy into, or The Who's Tommy. They tried to make that into a film back in the day. I'm sure it was crazy. I haven't seen it, but I imagine it was bonkers.
Also, but Hard Day's Night is another, the Beatles album. Night
was another. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Lemonade. Lemonade is the newest version of that.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see, like, if instead of a music video, what if you just wrote a story like a feature, but it was just not a documentary, like write a story and then just have an album be the underscoring of it all or the soundtrack to it all.
That's Purple Rain. That's what that movie is.
Purple Rain. Yeah, man.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. He wrote a story about himself and the music throughout the story is the album. Mm-hmm. And it was the most successful soundtrack ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious if that would come back.
I'm sure it just, you got to have that type of a budget. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to be able to really do a full production. And or maybe, I don't know, maybe, you know, because during the pandemic, Bo Durham did his special that was highly successful, highly popular, and it was very much music-based, and it had different concept videos with each song, and that's maybe the modern way of doing it. He didn't film that on anything but his iPhone, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it. It was great.
Yeah.
I think that will be the defining piece of art that came out of the pandemic that encapsulates what that moment was like. Which is bonkers that we lived through that shit. Like, it's crazy when you think back on it of like, what were we doing for 2 years? We were going crazy.
All right. I always feel like I have to emphasize this. It was a horrible time for a lot of people. People lost family members. People lost loved ones. That was hard. I will fully admit that. But for me, I've never had a problem, you know, entertaining myself. And in the pandemic, my wife literally moved into the house with me March of that year. Literally March, the first day we moved in together. We went to a wedding on March the 9th in St. Louis, got back March 12th. By the time we got back, the whole city was shut down. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So our experience living together started the month that the pandemic started. So I got to meet this new person. I got to move cross country with her. I proposed to her. Like, that was some of the best time of my life, and it was literally focused me wife time, because before that, living in LA, that last year, oh my God, 2019 was literally, I work all night, Adrian works all day, we see each other before we go to sleep and when we wake up, and that was it. And it was constant. That Mondays was my day off, that was our date night, that was the only day we got together. And then the pandemic hit, and I'm like, I get to really meet this person. I really get to explore a life with this person. I get to see what type of person they are to live with. And we loved living with each other. I was doing bartending lessons every Friday. So my best friend Chris would FaceTime me, and I would teach him 4 new cocktails. And we would drink so much. We would eat so much. I made some of the best meals I ever did. It was just an incredible time. But like you said, the fact that we lived through a time where I literally was off work almost a full year. Mm-hmm. And I got to explore, hike. I got to see new parts of the country. I went to Bryce Canyon, Grand Canyon. I went to Yosemite that year for the first time. I lived in LA for 5 years up to then, but I hadn't gone to Yosemite yet. I got to go to the Sonoyas. I got to explore Mesa Verde. I got to see so much of the country, so many things. You know, it was really an incredible time to live through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've made it to that point, dude. And as you clearly can see, I can talk to you all night. This is the type of stuff I love to talk about. And I love talking to you. I love the way you think. I love the way that you approach life. And I've always appreciated your relationship with Abby, she being one of my favorite people in the world. You're such a great guy. She needed someone like you. Me knowing the people she worked with in the past, you are truly the best type of person for her. And I'm just so happy that you two are together and you're able to compliment each other. And I appreciate you for that. I'm not sure how many people told you, hey, I appreciate you from being with one of my friends, but I appreciate you because you're a great guy and you've always been welcoming and wonderful from day one. And I appreciate that. With all of that said, made it to an ending conversation. Talk about everything we want to talk about. Last thing I have to ask, how do you feel?
I feel good. I really enjoyed this. I mean, I've been listening for a long time and I feel honored to be on. I also knew you were going to ask me that St. Louis question. And I wish I had a better answer for you, but I'll find it. It'll come. I don't know. Maybe I just need to accept. I don't know, man. I don't know what my fucking problem is, but I feel good about this. I'm grateful for you and everything that you do for this podcast, man. I've listened to a lot of people that I know and people that I don't know. And I just want to give some love to all the people who have been on in the past for kind of paving the way for people like me to come on and feel good about it. And also just love to you, man, because you are great. I've met a lot of Abby's college friends, but I feel like you and I have had the chance to be close in our friendship. And I'm very appreciative of that. So thank you for all of this.
Cheers to you, man.
Cheers.
I want to thank you for listening to the Black Man Talking Emotions podcast. The opening quote credit goes to Robert M. Persig. And shout out to Michael for being on the pod. You can follow Mike at MSHEPJORDAN, the number 9, on Instagram. Please subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast, and give us a good rating. 5 stars, please. And thank you. You can support the show by clicking the link at the bottom of the episode description. Also, tell me your stories about these subjects at DOML_AMOUR on Instagram or at DomLamour.com. I'm Dom Lamour. Much love.